From Minneapolis's historic West Bank, you're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, or streaming and archived on KFAI.org. It's where community has always grown.
This is North Star Stories, voices from where we live. Today in Minnesota,
the state commutes the sentence of a Mille Lacs band member. Then, a look at how Minnesota is preparing to honor Indigenous people, their histories, and cultures. And, are you registered to vote? We have some useful tips. I'm Gracie J. The Minnesota Board of Pardons has commuted the sentence of Brian Pippett, who spent more than 20 years in prison following a 2001 first-degree murder conviction. Pippett was one of five Native American men charged with the murder of an 84-year-old shopkeeper in 1998 in Aiken County, about an hour west of Duluth. The decision follows a 2024 recommendation from the Attorney General's Conviction Review Unit, which found overwhelming evidence of reasonable doubt in Pippett's case. The Attorney General praised the Conviction Review Unit's work and said the decision reflects Minnesota's commitment to correcting wrongful convictions. In today's main story, the second Monday of October is officially recognized in Minnesota as Indigenous Peoples Day. Zan Holston tells us more about this important holiday.
Monday, October 13th marks the third year that Minnesota celebrates Indigenous Peoples Day. In 2023, the state legislature replaced Columbus Day with a holiday dedicated to recognizing and uplifting Native nations. For State Senator Mary Kunish, who represents part of the North Metro area, the point isn't to dwell only on the harms of colonization.
Rather than looking at it in that way, we would like to recognize the Indigenous people here in our state and in our nation.
Kunish says the day isn't only symbolic. It's a chance for schools and cities to build stronger relationships with Native communities and to educate Minnesotans about history that has often been overlooked.
The Department of Education has provided a lot of resources to teachers.
Under the legislation, schools in Minnesota must dedicate a minimum of 1 hour to education on Indigenous history, culture, and issues, a requirement that aligns the day with other state holidays like Veterans Day and Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Before Minnesota recognized Indigenous Peoples Day, cities in the state had already begun leading the way. In 2014, the Minneapolis City Council started honoring the day alongside Columbus Day. And in Mankato, Indigenous activists and residents organized petitions and events to bring the observance to the community in 2018.
Of all the places in Minnesota, Mankato should have Indigenous Peoples Day because of the awful reality of what happened in 1862 here.
Diane Dobitz is a Unitarian Universalist church leader and a member of Mankato's Indigenous Peoples Day Committee. She's referring to the hanging of 38 Dakota men at the end of the U.S.-Dakota War. For Dobitz, working to get the day recognized was always about the healing power of the truth.
I think if we want to heal our trauma as human beings so that our children and our grandchildren can live with less violence and more acceptance and compassion, this is necessary work.
Senator Kunish also believes that those connections are crucial and that the more cities embrace the day, the greater the outcomes in communities can be.
Local municipalities, those sort of things, are using it as a way to build good partnership with their local Native community or tribe as well.
Celebrations take place across the state. In Mankato, events run from October 10th through the 13th with a film night, a community celebration, a book reading, and discussions. Duluth hosts its annual celebration at City Hall, and at Bede-Makaska in Minneapolis, a sunrise service will welcome hundreds.
Indigenous leaders and elders, and every year it grows larger and larger, and it's a lot of non-Native people that come to it to support and show their interest in recognizing that day.
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. National Voter Registration Day has passed, but you can check your registration and get ready to vote anytime. Minnesota residents can confirm their status, register, or update information online. To be eligible to vote in Minnesota, you must be a U.S. citizen at least 18 years old on Election Day, but 16 and 17-year-olds can pre-register, and you need to have lived in Minnesota for at least 20 days. Use the Secretary of State's Registered Vote page or the National Association of Secretaries of State Can I Vote tool.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's broadcast, the owner of a restaurant is sentenced in connection with the immigration raid earlier this year. Then, what you need to know about the upcoming elections. And the Minnesota Lacrosse Hall of Fame announces 12 inductees. I'm Chantel Sings. A federal judge sentenced the owner of Las Cuatro Milpas restaurants in Bloomington and Minneapolis to 8 months in prison for illegally re-entering the U.S. The man pleaded guilty earlier this month after federal agents raided his business in June, sparking protests along Lake Street. A judge said he weighed time served but imposed the prison term. After completing his sentence, the man will be deported to Mexico. Next, elections raise questions for both longtime voters and first-timers. Over the coming weeks leading up to Election Day, we'll bring you a series of stories on how elections work in Minnesota. For the first story, Jamad Jama looks at how Minnesotans can register, find voter support, and cast their ballots.
Whether or not you're a seasoned voter, it's always worth going over the basics. On November 4th, Minnesotans across the state will head to the polls. Knowing how to register, when to vote, and the ways you can cast your ballot can make all the difference.
We have a very strong civic culture in Minnesota, and I think a lot of segments of our society who are really committed to making sure that people understand the importance of using their voice. I'm Steve Simon, Minnesota's Secretary of State.
Minnesota's system is designed to meet voters where they are, and that starts with offering different ways you can register.
Voter registration basically means that you have to show you are who you say you are and you live where you say you live. And in Minnesota, we have a long and flexible list of things you can use to show either or both of those things.
From there, Minnesotans have several routes to choose from.
One is the old-fashioned way. Drop it off to a local election office in your city or in your county. The other thing you can do is to go to our website, mnvotes.gov, and very quickly and very simply do that online. The third way you can do it is on Election Day itself.
That same-day registration means that Minnesotans can still vote, even if they miss the deadline to register or move after the registration deadline. Voters who register on Election Day will need to bring identification and proof of address. And once you're registered, you have a couple options for actually casting your ballot.
One is to vote in person before Election Day at either county courthouse or city office, or some people just don't want to go into a polling place. So to do that, any Minnesotan can go to mnvotes.gov and order the ballot to come to them.
And of course, you can always vote in person on Election Day. The polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.
My name is Luna Allen Pekarian. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Citizens League.
The Citizens League works to provide guidance to voters, strengthen civic engagement, and reduce barriers.
A great deal of our work means being a resource that people feel comfortable reaching out to, asking questions, being directed to other organizations.
Luna says the democratic process should be accessible for everyone.
We know that folks in Greater Minnesota might face challenges with transportation, with polling place location, just delays based on broadband internet access. There have been increased efforts to make sure that there are election judges, certainly in Greater Minnesota, which just means you are helping to support people in your community to vote on Election Day.
Election judges are community members who staff polling places on Election Day. They check voters in, explain the process, and help those who need it. And in Greater Minnesota, having more election judges means better support to keep things running in smaller towns where resources can be more sparse. Voters who want to be ready for November can check eligibility and registration steps online at mnvote.gov. For North Star Stories, I'm Jamad Jama.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Lacrosse Hall of Fame has named its first ever class of 12 inductees, including Oneida educator Dan Neenum. Neenum dedicated his career to Native education and introducing Indigenous games into physical education. He's the only Indigenous citizen of the inaugural group and a nationally recognized expert on both the modern and traditional Native versions of the game. The Minnesota Lacrosse Hall of Fame is a virtual museum dedicated to lacrosse history and the Native origins of the sport.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's stories, a death at a daycare prompts a state investigation. Then, how a group of neighbors works to ensure the victims of the state's school and church shooting aren't forgotten. And why drivers need to be extra cautious this time of year. I'm Gracie J. The state of Minnesota has suspended the license of Rocking Horse Ranch Child Care in Savage, southwest of Minneapolis, after two infants suffered medical emergencies, including one fatality. The Department of Children, Youth, and Families called the situation, quote, an imminent risk of harm, and ordered the daycare to shut down immediately. Savage Police and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension are investigating. The Hennepin County Medical Examiner is conducting an autopsy to determine the cause of the child's death. Next, after the recent mass shooting at Annunciation Catholic School in Minneapolis, a group of volunteers started tying ribbons onto trees around the school. Lydia Moran tells us how the project is spreading beyond grief.
Trying to get it so that when they're driving on 35W, they can see some of the blue and green.
On Wednesday, August 27th, a shooter opened fire during Annunciation Catholic School's first mass of the school year. Two children were killed, and 21 others were injured. In the following days, bows in Annunciation School colors popped up around the surrounding neighborhoods. People directly affected by the shooting requested bows on their blocks.
How do we kind of keep showing these neighbors that the love and support is still here?
Sarah Henning is picking at a knot in a bright green strip of plastic tablecloth. After freeing it, she joins the green strip with a blue one and loops them around a fence, tying a neat bow. Cars on the Minneapolis freeway below honk occasionally. She makes her way along the bridge, taking down bows that have gotten lackluster and retying them. The bows continue up 54th Street, tied to trees and light poles, all the way to Annunciation Catholic School.
There was a group of us who were all individually making ribbons and tying ribbons on trees to show our neighbors that we loved and supported them, and then giving them to other neighbors so they could do the same. So literally eight people were all doing the same thing, and then we all just came together.
On the Friday after the shooting, the group put out a call for volunteers to help cut and distribute ribbons. More than 200 people came. Since then, they estimate that they have distributed 30,000 ribbons throughout Minnesota and even in other states. The effort is called Bows of Love.
We also have people saying, what do ribbons even do? Which I get, right? Like, if tying a ribbon on a pole would reverse the impact of what happened, this city would be blanketed, because that's, I think, how Minnesotans are.
Sarah lives a couple miles from Annunciation.
But what it does do is it gives people something to do with their grief and their worry and their anxiety, and it gives them a simple way to show their neighbors, we are bigger than this terrible thing that happened, and we are still here.
The women hope that whatever the bows become, it will show Annunciation families that the support for them has not faded.
Knowing the impact of that immediate trauma, how can we act as quickly as possible to overwhelm that trauma with love.
In 2023, Sarah was part of the community that went through the Covenant School shooting in Nashville.
So that people understand there's space for both to exist right away.
For more on Bows of Love, visit bowsoflove.com or find them on Instagram at bowsoflove.mn. The Catholic Community Foundation of Minnesota has a centralized fund that supports Annunciation families. Visit ccf-mn.org to learn more. For North Star Stories, I'm Lydia Moran.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Well, it's harvest season, and the Minnesota Department of Transportation, also known as MnDOT, is urging drivers to stay alert for large farm equipment on rural roads. MnDOT says drivers should slow down, use headlights, and wait for safe passing zones. Farmers are reminded to use flashing lights and slow-moving vehicle emblems to stay visible. Officials stress that patience and caution can help everyone share the road safely this fall.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Today, Minnesota health officials make recommendations about COVID-19 vaccinations. Then, a Minnesotan taken from us at an early age who left a lasting legacy. And the Pardons Board denies clemency for a Twin Cities professor. I'm Chantel Sings. The Minnesota Department of Health, or MDH, is endorsing new COVID-19 vaccine recommendations from top medical groups. Health officials say the vaccines prevent severe illness and death, and they want to ensure broad access. The guidance recommends vaccination for everyone over 6 months old, with a strong emphasis on children under two, pregnant women, high-risk individuals, and older adults. More information is available at the MDH website. In today's main story, Catherine DeSell remembers the extraordinary life and legacy of Simone Senegals, a dedicated Indigenous activist who passed away in Bemidji at the age of 54.
The world has lost a compassionate protector, advocate, and justice fighter, Simone Senegals, who recently passed away in September.
Buju Chinodinikwe Indigenikas. My name is Simone Senegals. My family is from the Red Lake Nation here in northern Minnesota.
That's Simone speaking in Regaining Food Sovereignty, a documentary she wrote and directed with Lakeland PBS, a public TV station serving northern Minnesota, and the Indigenous Environmental Network. The documentary was about the food systems in northern Minnesota Native communities.
This is a story about food. It's about our relationship with food as Indigenous peoples and as all human beings.
Simone worked with the Indigenous Environmental Network for more than 25 years, advocating for environmental justice and Indigenous rights.
Indigenous people suffer disproportionately from health problems. It's the result of a corporate-controlled global food system that values profit over human and ecological health.
Simone was a lifelong activist whose journey began as a teenager at the Northland Poster Collective, a South Minneapolis organization known for printing activist-inspired art. Simone went on to be a founding member of MMIW 218, an organization based in Bemidji, Minnesota, which is dedicated to raising awareness of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit relatives.
The National Crime Information Database reports that there are 5,712 known incidents of missing and murdered Indigenous women as of 2016. There's so many that we don't know about.
In 2017, Simone gave an interview on Amper's station KAXE Radio in Grand Rapids to raise awareness of missing and murdered Indigenous women.
There's a few things that go on that contribute to the lack of information and action around missing and murdered Indigenous women. Racism and discrimination, the devaluing of Indigenous women. If you want to disempower a people, you attack the women.
With the organization Grassroots Global Justice, Simone co-founded the Feminist Organizing Schools, designed to create a feminist economy that provides political education and leadership development.
We have to be brave, and we have to be willing to look hard at ourselves and see ourselves as part of a system that has been against us for many, many years. Also have strength to stand up against injustice.
Simone Senegals was an artist, beekeeper, mother, wife, friend, and member of the Eagle Clan, who left an everlasting impact on her community. Senegals' wake took place on September 25th, and traditional services were held September 26th in Red Lake. For North Star Stories, I'm Catherine DeSell.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Board of Pardons has denied a full pardon to Jason Soule, a formerly incarcerated abolitionist and Hamline University professor in St. Paul. Soule served time for firearm and drug convictions in the 1990s and early 2000s. In a newsletter, he said that he was not included in hearings but remains hopeful for future consideration. The Board of Pardons, made up of the governor, attorney general, and chief justice, requires at least two votes to grant clemency.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's segment, a man pleads guilty to mosque arsons. Then, as we approach the deadline set by the governor, we take a look at the state of broadband in Minnesota. And more than 50,000 students benefit from a unique financial aid program. I'm Gracie J. A 38-year-old man pleaded guilty to arson and damaging religious property after setting fires at two Minnesota mosques. Prosecutors say the man lit a blaze inside an Islamic center in Minneapolis in April 2023, then set fire to a mosque in Bloomington the next day. The man will be sentenced at a later date. The plea comes after a report last week that a Minneapolis mayoral candidate and state senator's campaign office was vandalized with an Islamophobic message and threat painted on a wall. Next, Governor Tim Walz set an ambitious goal for all Minnesotans to have broadband access. While progress has been made throughout the state, as we approach the 2026 deadline, it appears the state will fall short of that goal. Jose Osoria has the story.
Minnesota has an ambitious goal of establishing high-speed broadband connectivity throughout the state by 2026. While progress has been made, as we approach the end of 2025, it appears the state will fall short of that goal, with large pockets of Minnesota having no internet service, poor internet service, or inconsistent internet service. Bree Mackey, the executive director of the Office of Broadband Development, shares some of the most recent data.
Based on numbers in December of 2024, there was still about 143,000 homes and businesses that do not have the 25x3 speeds in their homes or places of business, and about another 189,000 homes and businesses that are lacking the 100x20.
These findings mean approximately 143,000 Minnesota homes and businesses are without basic internet for uploading and downloading content. The 2024 numbers also indicate that thousands of homes and businesses lack access to high-speed internet. Ms. Mackey says that these conditions are widespread based on very specific factors.
There are pockets across the state and in almost every county. Minnesota is a really big state, a huge agricultural state, and the density is less the further out we go. No matter where you are in the state, if you don't have it, you're impacted.
Scott County in the Southwest Metro is an example of a region where service providers encounter various landscape hurdles as they attempt to provide connectivity, with not only a metro area, but substantial agricultural land and underdeveloped areas. Perry Mulcrone, legislative and fiber program manager for Scott County, tells us the realities of bringing internet service to all homes and businesses in Scott County.
We don't have a timeline. It just, you know, we try to do what we can, working with the Office of Broadband Development every year, identifying areas that we know where we still have remaining gaps, actively encourage providers to finish and bring up service to these remaining locations.
In Scott County, along with access and connectivity, the affordability of service is important.
Competition helps keep costs in check. We just kind of let the market play out. Any carriers that want to come and provide services in Scott County, we can help them provide middle mile.
The Broadband Equity Access and Development Program, or BEAD, is a federal program established to implement statewide internet connectivity throughout the country. Bree Mackey says changes by the Trump administration has delayed funds from the $652 million allocated for the state.
In June, a policy notice from this new administration came to us. And with that, some of the requirements that were in the previous administration were changed.
Minnesota's Task Force on Broadband considers broadband connectivity as a cornerstone of the state's prosperity. While it appears the state will miss its ambitious deadline, the overall goal remains. For North Star Stories, I'm Jose Osoria.
You are listening to North Star Stories. More than 53,000 Minnesota students received tuition help from the North Star Promise Program, or NSP, in its first year. The Office of Higher Education says NSP exceeded expectations for the 2024-25 school year. The program is for students from families with incomes under $80,000 attending public or tribal colleges. NSP covers tuition and fees after other forms of aid are applied. Officials say North Star Promise is driving higher college enrollment across the state.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Welcome to Minnesota Native News. I'm Murray Rock. This week on Minnesota Native News, how tribal colleges and universities are responding to federal funding cuts, and a Red Lake artist shares details about a new film project. First, let's hear from producer Zan Holston.
For months, tribal colleges and universities, or TCUs, have been living under the threat of being defunded. Earlier this year, the Trump administration proposed a budget that cut their funding by 90%. A move that would effectively shut them down.
It's very hard to plan what an academic year is going to look like when you are concerned about inconsistency in funding.
Anawake Rose is president of AHEC, the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. She said since 80% of TCU budgets come from federal grants, it makes the schools especially vulnerable. But Congress failed to pass the budget by the end of September, triggering a government shutdown on October 1st. Just before the shutdown, the Department of Education awarded TCUs a one-time influx of $109 million, more than double the federal funding they got for the 2025 budget. That's enough money to keep schools open for at least another year.
We really can't even express how welcome it is and what an immediate impact and change it will bring on the education that we're able to provide.
That relief is crucial, but doesn't erase the bigger questions about the shutdown or whether the administration's proposed cuts will pass. If the cuts do go through, it would be devastating. Since TCUs don't typically have large reserves of money or endowments to draw from,
this academic year would be about how do you wind things down and shut things down as best as you can.
Still, Rose is confident that advocates in Congress are working to ensure TCUs remain funded.
We've also seen Congress propose some very strong numbers. We know that we have strong bipartisan support in Congress.
She also points to how investing in TCUs actually helps the U.S. economy. AHEC recently released a report showing alumni contributed $3.8 billion to the country's gross domestic product between 2022 and 2023.
When you look at the overall economic impact that we've had within our communities, we've been able to do that with drastic underfunding. So imagine what we could do if our institutions were fully funded.
For now, the future of TCUs rests with Congress. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Zan Holston.
Next, a new film project weaves together an artist's tragic story with Ojibwe mythology. Travis Zimmerman has more.
Visual artist and storyteller Jonathan Thunder has been busy writing and directing a short film, Ish Meets a Mermaid. Ish is short for Ishkade, which means fire in Ojibwe, and the film has been a labor of love for the talented Red Lake artist. Jonathan stars in the film alongside his wife, brother, and other family members.
I play Ish, the struggling artist. And my wife, Tashia, she plays Zebe, who is the mermaid. I got my brother, Charles, to play this character named Crazy Al, who I don't know what to say about Crazy Al, but everybody knows a Crazy Al, you know, in their lifetime. And Crazy Al had to go into the script.
When asked what else makes the film unique, Jonathan gives us a glimpse of the storyline.
It's a story that combines the tragic artist's biography that I've always been in love with, and it combines it with Ojibwe mythology based in the Great Lakes region.
Ish Meets a Mermaid was shot in Duluth and involves several of Jonathan's friends.
Alex Komet plays a character called the Busker, which is, he's kind of like a portal to the Twilight Zone in Ish's life. And my friend Hannah Smith also kind of plays a role between worlds as a train ticket clerk.
Now that production is officially over, the film is in the editing phase.
I'm kind of from the experimental film school. I'm doing the edit as well, and I've done some of the visual effects that go into the film.
People can expect to see the film making the film festival rounds in 2026.
I'm hoping to have it done with post-production by the end of the year.
People can still support the film and follow Jonathan to see what else he is up to.
IshMeetsAMermaid.com or JohnThunder.com is where you can learn more about it. Otherwise, I'm on Instagram.
For Minnesota Native News, this is Travis Zimmerman.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Got a shop, studio, food truck, or side hustle with soul? KFAI loves small businesses that keep the Twin Cities vibrant. Underwriting with us gets your name out to listeners who care about showing up, buying local, and spreading the word.
Underwriting with KFAI is not just support, it's connection. Let's grow something good together. Learn more at kfai.org/underwriting.
Support comes from the Walker Arts Center. The Annie Whitehawk Love Life